rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And it's 2007. Greetings, my friends. We are live. It's New Year's Day. And thanks to Andrew Dunn and Julian Sickman, who have been kind enough to show up in New York and put in their New Year's Day and share the day with us here today. Louise here with me in Portland, Oregon, and we have Clay Waters, in fact, on the lines with us. He's with the Times Watch. He's the director of Times Watch, timeswatch.org, the website. By the way, our phone number, 1-866-440-8466. We'll be taking your calls throughout the next 3 hours. If you want to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com. Clay Waters is the director of timeswatch.org, a conservative organization that's looking for liberal bias in the New York Times. Hey, Clay, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Great to have you. Any relation to John Waters?
No. I'm not even a Pink Floyd fan. It's sad.
I say Pink Flamingos.
Oh, that's Roger Waters.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But not John Waters either.
Yeah, clearly you're not related.
Okay. Well, I know that.
And, and definitely not politically either. You've got your top 10 lowlights of the New York Times for the year 2006, and it seems like an appropriate thing to go through here on the first day of 2007. You suggest that the Times was spinning John Kerry's botched joke. This was your number 10. Seems to me that Fox News was doing the spinning, not the New York Times. Everybody on the right was trying to make it like Kerry was trashing the troops when his prepared notes, it would be obvious, I think, to any thinking person that he was trying to make a joke at George Bush's expense.
Well, the reporter, Kate Zernike, I think she totally misrepresented what Kerry actually said. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, it was a botched joke, or he meant to insult the troops. I'm sure it was a botched joke. But this is what she said in the Times. But with a single word, or a single word left out of what was supposed to be a laugh line, and then she goes on to say, Mr. Kerry's become a punching bag. But it wasn't just a single word. It was a whole paragraph that he left out. I mean, if it was just a single word, there wouldn't have been a controversy at all. In fact, the Times had to correct that story the next day. And here's what he said. I'll do it briefly. Mr. Kerry not only dropped the word us, but he also rephrased his opening sentence extensively and omitted a reference to President Bush. I mean, apparently, Kate Zernike was the only person interested in politics that didn't actually hear what Kerry said.
Well, I was on the air at the time that it happened. I mean, everybody was pointing out that if he had simply included the word us, which was in his original script, if he had simply included the word us, get us in Iraq, it would have been obvious he wasn't talking about troops, he was talking about decision makers, and that even if he hadn't gone on to mention Bush, everybody would have figured out that he was making a joke at the expense of President Bush. Aren't you just like splitting hairs here in an attempt to trash the New York Times? I mean, is this the best you've got?
This is my number 10, actually. But
let's move on then.
The Times thought it worthy of correcting because they pointed out that, unlike Zernike kind of suggested that Kerry had said just ask President Bush, but he hadn't.
And okay. Let's move to number 9 here. You're coddling illegal immigrants and the liberals who love them. The last I heard, it was George W. Bush who wants there to be a guest worker program in the United States.
Yeah, and George Bush, of course, is not very conservative on this issue. And in fact, the Times, in one of the few spots that will actually defend Bush against conservatives, Jim Rutenberg, he was on the front page talking. He was pitting compassionate conservatives. That was his word, compassionate conservatives like Bush, who favor amnesty for illegal aliens, against what he quotes doctrinaire Republicans who want to enforce immigration laws.
Yeah. Well, I suspect you and I are probably on the same side of this issue, and I would submit to you that this is not a conservative or liberal issue, whether or not a country should have borders. And in fact, traditionally, it's been liberals, it's been progressives who have fought the large numbers of aliens being brought into the United States. It was the progressives, it was the Wobblies back in the 1880s who were fighting the railroads, who were importing people from China to work on the railroads to bust the labor unions. It was Cesar Chavez in the 1960s, along with Walter Mondale, who marched down to the Mexican border to protest illegal aliens coming in and busting the, being used by big farmers to bust the United Farm Workers Union. So.
Yeah, there is an interesting split in the time. Paul Krugman and Nicholas Kristof, who Paul Krugman is a traditional kind of a partisan liberal, Nicholas Kristof kind of an iconoclast, but they're both hint, you know, that maybe this isn't the best thing. Maybe this, in, you know, amnesty or whatever you want to say, isn't the best thing. But they, those
yeah, I agree. I agree. But again, to say that this, you know, the covering this story makes the New York Times literal, I mean, you haven't convinced me yet here. Let's see if we can get another one. Hal Raines, former executive editor of the New York Times, his autobiography in 2006, the one that got away. He says, quote, Fox shills for the Republican Party and panders to the latest of America's periodic religious manias. You don't think this is true?
I like the next line. The key to understanding Fox News is to grasp the anomalous fact that its consumers know its news is made up. And I'd like to go to another part of his autobiography. Fox Television showed us the future. Outright lies and paranoid opinions packaged as news under the oversight of Rupert Murdoch, a flagrant pirate, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, let's look at this. This is a study done by PIPA, which mirrors studies, as you know, that were done by a group of, by Pew, by Zogby, by others. Americans were asked, do you believe that weapons of mass destruction were found in Iraq? Viewers of Fox News, 80% said yes. Viewers of public television and NPR, 23% said yes. Average under 40% across the United States. Do you believe that there has been demonstrated links between Iraq, Al-Qaeda, and 9/11? 16% of NPR viewers and listeners say yes. 67% of Fox News listeners say yes. And by the way, the President of the United States has said that the answer is no to both those questions. Both those questions that 80% of Fox viewers think the answer is yes to with regard to weapons of mass destruction, and 67% of Fox viewers think that, you know, with regard to Iraq and, you know, 9/11. I mean, here's George Bush himself.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Now, you know, if Fox News is not making up, you know, quote, news, end quote, then how is it that their viewers are so misinformed?
Well, you can play it the other way. I mean, I'm sure if you go to NPR, there are higher percentage of people there who think that Bush caused 9/11 or that UFOs exist.
I've never seen a study that demonstrated that.
Well,
I have never seen it. But however, if you ask, for example, here's another question. Thinking about how all the people in the world feel about how the U.S. has gone to war in Iraq, do you think the majority of people in the world favor the U.S. having gone to war? 5% of Americans say yes. 35% of Fox News viewers say yes. There's something really weird going on with Fox News viewers.
Those are good points, but of course I'm looking at the liberal bias of the New York Times, and I'm sure that the Times.
But you're saying that the Times saying that Fox makes up news gives them a liberal bias. I'm saying it simply makes them accurate truth tellers.
Do you point me to something where they're making news up? I mean, people obviously conservatives are
okay.
Drawn to Fox, and they're obviously
here's an example.
Trying to defend Bush and the administration.
Here's an example. This is a newscast on June 4th, 2004. This is presented as news. Quote, the global warming treaty known as the Kyoto Protocol is practically dead in the U.S., but the treaty's left-leaning environmental extremist supporters haven't given up their fantasy of creating a socialist global economy through controls on energy use. This report concludes there is no scientific evidence of global warming, and the junk science-fueled Kyoto Protocol would be an economic suicide capsule. End of quote. That was read as a news headline in Fox News on June 4, 2004. Now, you can't tell me you think that that's true.
Now, there's a police siren going by my window, but you said that he's quoting a report and he's summarizing the report?
No, this is verbatim. This was read on Fox News on June 4th, 2004. I even have the screenshot here. The screenshot says junk science and shows a microscope. The global warming treaty known as the Kyoto Protocol is practically dead in the U.S., but the treaty's left-leaning environmental extremist supporters haven't given up their fantasy of creating a socialist global economy through controls on energy use. Those left-leaning socialist supporters include every Western nation in the world.
I mean, it's obviously we have...
Except for Australia.
It's obviously we have political disagreements, but, I mean, he's right about environmental extremism. They've been wrong so many times in the last... I mean, we're talking about Paul Ehrlich and overpopulation.
All right, well, here's another one that you see. We only have about a minute left here.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You're quoting Linda Greenhouse, and she says she must be a liberal because she says that we're not upholding the rule of law and, you know, things like that. And the use of religion in politics. Let me just share a couple of quotes with you.
Okay.
This is the conservative movement is founded on the simple tenet that people have the right to live life as they please as long as they don't hurt anyone else in the process. Every good Christian should line up and kick Jerry Falwell's ass. I don't have any respect for the religious right. There's no place in this country for practicing religion and politics. That goes for Falwell, Robertson, and all the rest of these political preachers. They're a detriment to the country. You know who said that?
Let me guess, John McCain.
Barry Goldwater.
Well, yeah. He's hardly today's-style conservative.
We're talking with Clay. Can you stick around for a few minutes?
Sure.
Let's just do one more segment, then we'll let our listeners, we'll bring our listeners. Clay Waters, he's the director of Times Watch, timeswatch.org. Tom Hartman here with you live on New Year's Day, 16 minutes past the hour.
The Al Franken Show with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Like a road that you travel on, there's one day here and the next day gone. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside every darkened door, where blues won't haunt you anymore. With a brave, all free, and lover soul, come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate to break down the garden gate.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour, your minimum daily adult requirement of Saturday. Tom Hartman here with you. Live on New Year's Day, Saddam executed a bit too soon, the U.S. government is now saying. Interesting. We can get into a conversation of that as the day goes on. A lot happened over the weekend. I want to get into some economic issues here as we go on through these 3 hours. Right now, however, we're talking with Clay Waters. Clay Waters is the director of TimesWatch.org, an organization dedicated to exposing the liberal bias of the New York Times. TimesWatch.org. Clay, your number one story. The Times cripples another terrorist surveillance program.
Right. This is about back in June, Eric Lichtblau and James Risen, they revealed on the lead story, quote, the headline, Bank Data Sifted in Secret by U.S. to Block Terror. This is involving the international bank transfers by SWIFT, the International Bank Consortium. And the Bush administration pleaded with the Times, you know, keep this a secret, but Bill Keller, the executive editor, made his own executive decision and said, you know, this isn't a secret, national security secret worth keeping.
Right. And it may well be a violation of the law. I mean, that was the whole point. Don't you want to have a...
Well, the Times never said it was a violation of the law. They didn't even make the allegation. They just showed these concerns. And they even used the word secret in the headline. But when there was a public backlash, Bill Keller and Eric Lichtblau went on the air and said, well, you know, this wasn't really a secret. The terrorists knew about this anyway. I mean, which way is it? I mean, it's...
So if it wasn't a secret and the terrorists already knew about it... Well, and why are you all upset about it?
That's not how the Times sold the story initially. They said Blair's secret headline, and the lead sentence was, you know, it said it was a secret program. So, okay. You know, either they're misrepresenting it then or they are doing it now.
Well, the Times is certainly an imperfect institution. I think that, you know, the failure to get the word right in one or the other story doesn't mean that the New York Times is the antithesis of Fox News, does it?
Well, I think the Times is a lot more liberal to the left than Fox is to the right, and the Times call themselves and hold themselves out as an objective news story.
Yeah, the newspaper of record of the United States. You said, Clay, we're talking Clay Waters, TimesWatch.org. You said a few minutes ago that Ronald Reagan and Barry Goldwater were different kinds of conservatives. It seems to me increasingly that the people who call themselves conservatives are really not conservatives, as in move slowly, be careful, conserve your resources, some of the traditional definitions of conservatives, but rather are radicals, reactionaries, and proto-fascists.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know, I'm just tossing that out and give you an opportunity to respond to it. Convince me that you're not, or that the folks that you're holding up as ideals are not.
Well, what are conservatives trying to conserve? You can always say, you know, what are liberals trying to...
Well, here's what Barry Goldwater said. He said, I've spent a number of years carrying the flag of the old conservatism. These new groups that call themselves conservative have nothing to do with conservative or liberal politics. The uncompromising position of these groups is a divisive element that would tear apart the very spirit of our representative system if they gain sufficient strength. He said this in 1981. Being a conservative in America traditionally has meant that one holds deep and respect for our Constitution. We conservatives believe sincerely in the integrity of the Constitution. We trust the freedoms that document protects. Can any of us refute the wisdom of Madison and the other framers? These new conservatives think they can.
Well, Goldwater, bless his heart, he was a libertarian conservative. And the mere fact that Linda Greenhouse talks about the hijacking of religious fundamentalism, she's a Supreme Court reporter for the Times, happens to agree with a libertarian response from Barry Goldwater, doesn't mean that the Times isn't liberal. I mean, it's obviously a liberal statement she was making, talking about crying at a Simon and Garfunkel concert about the perfidy of the Bush administration. I mean, it's almost out of central casting.
But why is it not fascistic for the Bush administration to be bugging your phone and mine without a wiretap, without a warrant, in violation of the Fourth Amendment?
Well, go to the Internal Revenue Service. I mean, liberals support the IRS, and their standards.
The IRS is not tapping my phone and yours, Clay.
Much lower.
What is conservative about tapping people's phones?
They're only tapping suspected calls from U.S. people, not even necessarily U.S. citizens, but people in the United States to international calls, international communications. It's not like it's a Big Brother, you know, tapping everyone.
No, they have, you know, Bush has since confessed that, number one, this started before 9/11, and number two, it involves domestic-to-domestic calls.
I don't know about the before 9/11 thing. I think, obviously, I would have seen something in the Times. I'm ready to be
It's been in the Times several times. I mean, this is, you know, the guy who pointed this out was Arlen Specter, the Republican, that this started before 9/11.
This exact program, and this was unlike anything Bill Clinton did.
Actually, there are
monitoring things.
Well, Bill Clinton isn't president of the United States, and I'm not going to sit here and defend Bill Clinton. But frankly, I don't know what Bill Clinton did. But what we do know that George Bush has been tapping our phones and bragging about it. That's what Richard Nixon did. How do you know that his entire program isn't just to tap the phones of the Democratic Party?
Okay. Well,
you don't know. I mean, isn't that a problem?
I don't know what that has to do with New York Times liberal bias.
Good point. Okay. Clay Waters, timeswatch.org, the website. Clay, you're a good guy. I appreciate you being on with us.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-440-8466. We are live. It's New Year's Day. We'll be back with your calls right after this. Because we get around
talking about my generation.
Let's take you a call from
talking about my generation.
I'll die before I get old. And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. And Karen in Thoroughway, Washington, listening on KPPK Talk 1090. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're going to touch on Saddam's death, because I thought it was awfully convenient to stage it on a Friday night just before the long weekend. And, of course, Air America is down for the holidays, and you're going to be one of the first people on that side to comment on it.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a couple of quick thoughts on it. Number one, I thought it was, and not just me, I mean, all across Iraq, all across the Middle East, the Arab world, people thought it was particularly ironic. This is the weekend that in Islam people celebrate the willingness of Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. It was Abraham and Isaac, right? If I'm recalling correctly, yeah. And then God at the last minute said, no, don't kill him. And so what they do is they sacrifice, and in fact there was an interesting article in the paper this morning that I thought we tore out, but I don't have it in front of me here, about how people all over the Middle East were showing up in emergency rooms because they'd accidentally hurt themselves, you know, cows falling on them and you know, cutting their hands and things by accident and whatnot. In fact, here, Louise has the story in her pocket. Here it is. More than 1,000 people spent the first day of the Muslim feast of Eid al-Adha in emergency wards Sunday after stabbing themselves or suffering other injuries while sacrificing startled animals. 1,413 people. So this is the day that they sacrifice animals so that everybody's sins are forgiven, as a way of, you know, kind of remembering Abraham's willingness to sacrifice Isaac. And that irony of Saddam being executed as that holiday began is not lost on the Sunnis in particular and on people across the Middle East, number one. Number two, what we did in executing Saddam when we did, or what the Maliki government did, was effectively buried all of the stories that this guy could take, you know, could tell. I mean, you know, dead man tell no tales. It's true. And so the Bush administration's got to be letting out a huge sigh of relief, particularly Rumsfeld and Bush Sr. And number three, I found it fascinating that in none of the coverage that I saw over the weekend of the execution of Saddam Hussein, and in none of the reports that I read in the New York Times and other media, was there extensive detailing of the fact that we brought this guy, we helped this guy come to power, we supported him in the revolution of, as I recall, 63. We provided him with the gas that he used against the Kurds. We provided him with biological weapons. We provided him with the mustard gas he used in the Iran-Iraq war. I mean, Robert Fisk writes about this. You can go over to commondreams.org and read the British press is all talking about this, how the United States, Saddam was essentially a creature of the United States. But the American press somehow has forgotten that, just like we forgot that we supported Osama bin Laden against, you know, in Afghanistan against the Soviets.
As a footnote to that, I think that I consider the Times to be kind of right wing, to be truthful.
I don't disagree. I'd say it's actually corporate wing. The Times' interests are the interests of corporate America.
Right. And, of course, they support the Chalabi, Judith yep. Miller and all that. But at any rate, they did one small thing over the weekend. There was an editorial by a Kurd scholar who said, "This happened too soon. What about the really big crimes?"
Yeah, that's the third point is that the Kurds are sitting around going, "Hey, wait a minute. We wanted to have a trial where we could find out what, you know, where we could prove what he did to us." Because the Kurds would like to get some justice in this world, but the Turks don't want that to happen. Broadly, the Iraqis don't want that to happen, and definitely the Americans don't want that to happen because we helped Saddam murder Kurds.
Yes.
And so it ain't going to happen. Karen, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Charlie in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Charlie, you're on the air. What's up?
Tom, it's so great to hear you after this long weekend, as that previous caller pointed out. It was nonstop. The Ford funeral, if you heard the speakers, Hastert, Ted Stevens, Cheney, the continual defense of Ford's pardoning of Nixon. I guess they're still insecure about it because they feel they have to defend it so much.
Oh, it's got nothing to do with insecurity. They're looking forward, Charlie. And by the way, thanks for listening to WWRL there in Brooklyn, in New York. The reason that Dick Cheney is out there going, "Isn't it wonderful that Jerry Ford pardoned Nixon?" is because he's hoping for a pardon himself.
Absolutely. You know, but what goes on, George Lakoff talks about framing. What's going on is what the Russians used to call retrospective falsification. They're changing the way we look at history. That's why I confronted a scholar on NPR, a so-called scholar on Gerald Ford, who knew nothing about the picture of Rumsfeld visiting Iraq. He had made the statement that Rumsfeld was frozen out of the Reagan administration. It's as if it's like 1984. They want to brainwash us into thinking these things didn't happen and getting Saddam killed in that way. Look at the logic behind the greatness of the pardoning of Nixon, healing, binding up the wounds. When you look at their rationale for executing Saddam so quickly, their logic falls apart. They're totally talking out of both sides of their mouth.
Yeah. Well said, Charlie. Well said. Thank you very much. Ron in San Francisco, listening on The Quake. Hey, Ron.
Good morning. Tom, first, a happy New Year's greeting.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year's to you, too.
Second, I have to make a correction to something that you said a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
For people of the Islamic faith, it's the sacrifice of Ishmael, not the sacrifice of Isaac.
Oh, so it's not the Old Testament.
Well, apparently it's the Old Testament story kind of rewritten, or vice versa. I'm not sure who rewrote what, but for the people of Islamic faith, since they consider themselves descendants of Ishmael, that would be the their religious story, but I don't usually catch you in something you did wrong. Before you got
tell me what I read in the paper.
Yeah, before you got calls from thousands of Muslims, I just wanted to get that to you.
Well, thank you, Ron. Okay. I appreciate the heads up. Good to hear from you, Ken in Nashville, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Tom. Gee, I'm glad to hear some fresh programming on a day that normally you hear reruns.
Yeah, well, I've always worked New Year's Day.
Yeah, and I've noticed you tend to work holidays, which I know that's a hardness on you, I suppose.
Well, it's not. I enjoy it. I'm doing something that if they didn't pay me for it, I'd do it anyway. I mean, I'm having a good time. So,
hey, you know, something that wasn't brought up with your conversation with your guest, but I suppose being have taken journalism in college and such, and having worked in it, it's just something annoys the whatever out of me. If somebody out of Fox wants to state that the environmentalists have a socialist agenda, and they do it in an editorial section, I have no problem with that. I think it's a little whacked, but I don't have
right. Let Sean Hannity say it rather than one of their so-called news reporters.
Yeah, and I have heard Fox. When Fox News pretty much first came on, I was listening to it, and they were doing it. I actually heard once they were talking about Clinton, and it was two hosts, two supposed anchors, and they were talking to each other, and one turned to the other and said, yeah, he's really kind of a jerk. I'm being polite here. That's not what they said. Mm-hmm. The other one said, yeah, he is. And then they just went on going, I'm not going to listen to this.
Yeah, exactly. It's when news becomes contaminated by editorial that the editorial ceases to have credibility. It's the old Manchester Union leader, Bill Loeb used to have editorials on the front page and spin the news, and Fox has just picked up on that. Ken, thank you very much. Point well made. Mark and Middleville, Michigan, listening to WTKG at 12:30 a.m. to 12:30 in Grand Rapids. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Happy New Year, Tom.
Happy New Year to you, too.
My question is about the European Union and
yes,
the
sir.
Currency.
Yeah.
They just admitted two members at midnight, Bulgaria and Romania.
Mm-hmm.
And Dubai, or the United Arab Emirates, has dropped the dollar as the reserve currency.
Right.
If other countries follow suit, does this mean that we have a repeat of the 1970s where Nixon took us out of the Bretton Woods Agreement and there were all these dollars washing around and we had stagflation?
Could be. It depends on which countries take us out. You're right that the UAE decided to pull their reserves, but the UAE's reserves in dollars were not all that great. If Saudi Arabia were to do it, or if China were to do it, or if Japan were to do it, or if the United Kingdom were to do it, then we would really be in big trouble. It's unlikely that any of those countries will, because it would start a chain reaction that would cause the dollar to crash so far and so hard that it's unlikely that they could divest themselves of more than 10-20% of their reserves before everything else would become worthless. But it does represent a very troubling trend, and a lot of people are very concerned about this.
Now, the follow-up to this is...
Let me just add one other thing, Mark. With regard to the euro, it was also announced about a week ago, and we talked about this very briefly last week, that the euro now has surpassed the dollar as the currency, the largest currency in circulation in the world. And they just calculated it back. It actually happened in October, but they discovered that it had happened in October last week. Another concerning thing for the dollar.
Now, is it realistic that Venezuela and Iran will set up a borsch to trade oil in euros and that therefore driving up the price of oil?
It's realistic that they'll set up the borsch. It's realistic that they'll start accepting euros instead of dollars. Whether or not that's going to cause a huge problem, is subject to debate. It could. I'm not one of those ones who thinks that we took out Saddam because he said he was going to start accepting euros. I think that this predated that by at least several years. Back in 1998, these guys were talking about taking out Saddam. Back in 91, they were talking about taking out Saddam. But, whether that's going to bring down the dollar or cause some huge increase in the price of oil in dollars is questionable. What I'm seeing for the dollar is just a steady erosion. We're seeing the value of the dollar just disintegrating. Mark, thank you very much for the call. I remember, if you think back, I remember in the early 70s when I made 20-some-odd thousand dollars, and it was more than my father was making, and it was such a big deal for me. Wow, I'm making more than my dad working in tool and die shop, and he was raising a family of six on this. That was good money back then. It's like inflation has just so ripped us apart. 45 minutes past the hour.
Al Franken Show. Now back to guest host Tom Hartman.
And who's gonna pay the bill? Who's gonna pay the bill? Not Rush Limbaugh, not George Will, not those chicken hawks on Capitol Hill, not the tax cut billionaires. You know the drill. You're gonna pay the bill.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. A place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least, you know, clean elections, national health care. How about a clean environment? How about world peace? We'd work for that. It's New Year's Day. We're live. Thanks to the caller on, I've forgotten now who it was who called, but or what station, but this whole thing of Abraham's son, in the Quran, he's referred to as Ibrahim, and of course there's Ishmael and Isaac were the two sons of Abraham. Ishmael is the grandfather of the Arabs, and Isaac is the grandfather of the Jews, in this, as the story goes. And in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the Jewish story, Isaac was the one who Abraham was going to sacrifice. But it turns out in the Quran, Ishmael is the one that Ibrahim took up and was ready to sacrifice. And then God's voice came down and said, "No, no, don't do it. That's okay." And so anyhow, this is the weekend. This is the holiday, Eid al-Adha, the festival of the sacrifice, where they sacrifice animals. And they've got me doing it now. Fox News and whatnot. Saddam Hussein viewed as being sacrificed. Jake in Arcata, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Jake, what's up?
Hey, Happy New Year, Tom.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
Hey, I'd just like to discuss Saddam Hussein's execution and an aspect of it that the American media was strangely silent on. We all remember the Republican sexual harasser on the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, tried to claim he was a victim of a high-tech lynching. You know, there's no doubt Saddam Hussein was a victim of a high-tech lynching. And the fact is the Arab world views this so-called war on terror as a new crusade. Bush himself said it. They view it as a racist war against Arabs, against Muslims. And by, you know, under the orders of the Bush administration, having Saddam Hussein lynched on TV for everybody to see, that sends a message to the Middle East that we are not going to be able to control. They're not going to accept what we did, even though we all know Saddam Hussein was a war criminal. The fact is, this war in Iraq is criminal. Yeah. Bush is a war criminal. And we have no place, you know, executing somebody before they have a chance to testify against George Bush, because I think that's really what is going on. Like you said, dead men tell no tales, Tom.
Yeah. Well, and Jake, this is why what should have been done, which is that Saddam Hussein should have been remanded to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, just the same as Slobodan Milosevic was during the Clinton administration. What should have been done was not done, because then you'd have an actual trial, you'd have real testimony, you would have, you know, the stories and the secrets coming out, which would not look good for the Bush. It's not so much that it would hurt the United States' reputation. You know, we're certainly willing to look pretty unflinchingly at our own past evils. I mean, look at the history of slavery in the United States. Nobody's denying that, for example, or many of the other things that we've done. But it would reflect poorly on the people who are currently in the Bush administration, because they were so complicit in so many of Saddam's crimes back when they were members of the Reagan-Bush administration and then the Bush 1 administration. And so, you know, I don't disagree with you at all, Jake. I think it's a true tragedy. Thank you for the call. Andre in South Carolina, listening on 1230 AM. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Andre. What's up?
Well, Happy New Year anyway.
Thank you.
I've been sitting out here listening, and I have a question for you. I feel like the militarization or buildup of military around Iran and the combination of those sanctions are history repeating itself in that the Bush administration, and I don't know if the Democrats have signed on, but it looks like we're getting ready to attack Iran.
I agree.
And my question was, what do you think we can do to stop it?
Well, we need to publicize it, first of all, and make it, you know, very, very obvious that this is what's going on. And there's a lot of people trying to do that. The one thing that could stand in the way of Bush's plans to attack Iran. I mean, it's interesting. 6 months ago on this program, Scott Ritter came on, and I said, Scott, my guess is that Bush is going to start a war with Iran, or he's going to encourage Israel, for example, to attack the Iranian nuclear facilities as a way of whipping up hysteria in the United States to help himself get elected in the 2006 election. Or not himself, but the Republicans, you know, in the 2006 election. And Scott Ritter said, no, no. He said he's not going to attack Iran until March, for the same reason that he didn't attack attack Iraq until March, and that's because you've got to wait until the weather's right, the clouds are right, the moon is right, all that kind of stuff. He said, if in the winter you start seeing the positioning of military hardware in the Persian Gulf, and, you know, he said there's already, you know, special forces ops going on inside Iran. He said, if that continues, and if you hear a huge amplification of the rhetoric against Iran, and if Bush starts pushing UN Security Council resolutions, then you know that in February, March, April, some late February through early April, sometime during that time window, that he's going to attack Iran, or he's going to, you know, or one of our allies will. We'll see. And I think that we're seeing that. And I think that what we need to be doing, as you did with this call, you know, calling into radio talk shows, pointing it out, mentioning it. I try to mention it at least once or twice a week and get it out there, because the only way we're going to stop it is by making people conscious of the fact that they're already planning it. And this is the rat in the corner scenario.
Absolutely. I thank you so much for giving me the time to put it out there, and I will continue to do exactly what you said.
Great. Thank you very much, Andre, and thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to us on 12:30 a.m. there. Oh, my. The first hour gone. Two more hours live here nationwide on New Year's Day. Tom Hartman here with you, also filling in for Al Franken on Air America Radio. 56 minutes past the hour. Al will be back tomorrow. Back from Iraq, and from his USO work. And God bless you, Al, for doing it. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with, I just want to share with you Paul Krugman and Heather Volkusch's view on this whole thing, how this is all shaking out. Right after the break, we'll be continuing taking your calls.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Private capital tends to become concentrated in a few hands, wrote Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein, back in 1949. He went on, the result of these developments is an oligarchy of private capital, the enormous power of which cannot be effectively checked even by a democratically organized political society. By the way, welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you live on New Year's Day. The reason I share that little clip from Einstein's 1949 argument for regulated capitalism, or what, at the time what was referred to as socialism, is a story that was in our paper here where I live. Louise and I live in Portland, Oregon, and have for about 2 years. We moved here from Vermont. And this local story by Larry Bingham in the Oregonian. A few days before Christmas, the single mom from Beaverton — Beaverton is a suburb of Portland — was waiting tables at a small cafe in Idaho when a woman who lives nearby came in with a friend. Business had slowed since the state started widening the highway, so Rochelle St. Pierre had time to talk. The customer, St. Pierre guessed she was in her 50s, wanted to know how she'd come to waitress at Cookie's famous potatoes and steakhouse in Caldwell. In other words, you know, she's asking this waitress, how come you're a waitress? St. Pierre told her story. When the father of her three young children started doing meth, she left him. She packed up her kids and moved to the small town near the eastern Oregon border so she'd be close to her brother and sister. At Cookies — this is the name of the diner — St. Pierre, 27, launched a new life with her kids, Devin, 7, Zoe, 5, and Bradley, 3. But that's not the end of the story. The next day, this woman comes back to the restaurant. This same anonymous guest, customer. When the woman arrived, she ordered the Idaho melt, grilled turkey, bacon, cheese, avocado, tomatoes, tomato, lettuce, and onion, and a Coke. Her boyfriend had a Philly cheesesteak and iced tea. They asked if St. Pierre, the waitress, was ready for the holidays. She didn't tell them. She did not tell them that in order to buy gifts for her kids, she'd neglected her heat and electricity bills, trusting the utilities wouldn't cut her off. She planned to pay the bills with a tax refund. All St. Pierre said was, yes, she had bought gifts for her kids. The woman pointed to St. Pierre's sneakers, which were falling apart. Santa's going to bring you a new pair of shoes, she said. And before she left the diner, the woman who never introduced herself gave the waitress a hug. St. Pierre was cleaning the table when she saw the check, the words Christmas presents, and the amount. She started breathing fast and feeling weak in the knees. The startled cook rushed over and shook her. The tip, St. Pierre explained through tears, was $1,000. In the few days since then, the shock has worn off and the check has cleared. St. Pierre spent $300 on gift for her kids, a coat for herself, and a pair of Nikes to wear at work. She's saving the remaining $700 to buy a used car. She doesn't know where the road will take her next, but if the future is anything like this year, it will be full of surprises. A car would be nice for the ride. Now, it's a beautiful story and kind of a heart-touching story, and certainly, you know, I'm sure the newspaper and Larry Bingham thought, you know, here's the Christmas Carol, right? This is Dickens' story. But it raises for me the question of why is it that we now live in Dickens' world? Dickens' father was thrown into a debtor's prison. Victorian-era England, economically, was a disaster, as is the United States right now, as the result of 26 years of conservative economic policies. There was a time when being a waitress could pay your bills. My wife worked her way through college as a waitress in a Howard Johnson's back in the early 1970s and the late 1960s. I mean, this is... things have changed. That's how much things have changed. It is now not possible to live on a minimum wage or on a waitress's job. This reminds me of a story that E.J. Montini wrote in the Arizona Republic on the 4th of May in 2004. It's a brilliant story. He put an audio clip up on his website of a call that he got on his answering machine from a reader to his column. E.J. Montini, absolutely brilliant writer, one of my heroes. This guy is really competent. And this is the call that he received on his answering machine.
I'm calling in, and I'm promising myself not to cry, but you're always right about things that are going on in the current events. I'm wondering, has anybody noticed in America, all of us that are unemployed? I'm 43 years old, and I've been working since I was 16. My husband is 45. We've been married 22 years, and we've always worked. A year ago, I lost my job. 6 months ago, his job was outsourced to India. We have three children. One that's 18, and we were going to try to help them get through college. But anyway, I just wondered, there's so many of us, and people that don't seem to notice what's going on. And nobody, you see, I read the paper, and I don't see a lot of people writing about it. And I know there's a lot of them out there because I talk to my friends every day that I used to work with, and there are no jobs. And it just seems like somebody ought to write that a lot of jobs have gone overseas, and there's no jobs in this country for people that have worked all their lives. And, yesterday I was on the phone looking around for shelters because we've got another 2 months before we're going to get thrown out of our house. And we were part of that middle class section there. I never thought this was supposed to happen to us. And I know there's a lot of people out there like us. So anyway, it'd be neat if somebody would write and make the country aware that, I feel like invisible. And you go to the grocery store and it's like seemingly we're an invisible section. But I think there's like millions of us. So anyway, somebody ought to write about it. And you always write about everything and you make it good. And nobody hears us. So
to respond or forward, press 1. To delete, press star D.
E.J. Mantini then wrote about it and did a marvelous job in pointing that up. But this is... in the Arizona Republic, on the 4th of May, 2004, you can go back and find the archives. In fact, there's a link to it, to the old archive of it, over on our message boards. But this is the America that the conservatives have brought us. Paul Krugman wrote about this last week. He called it a failed revolution. You know, the Republicans back during the Clinton era, well, actually, the Republicans ever since the 1800s, ever since the Republican Party was taken over by the robber barons in the 1880s and ceased to be a party of reform and started to be the party of the rich and the well-bred, to quote Thomas Jefferson's reference to the Federalists, which essentially is what the Republicans have become the reincarnation of. Ever since that happened, they have been pushing for this absolute laissez-faire world, this absolute unregulated world where capital rules. What you could call a meritocracy, where the definition of merit is wealth. It's Calvinism. You know, John Calvin, the British theologian who came up with the idea that wealth is a sign of God's blessing. And if you don't have wealth, then it must be God cursed you, right? It's a variation on the justification for the caste system in India. Well, you must have bad karma from a previous lifetime. No, it is a dysfunctional social system. We have come up with a dysfunctional social structure. We have 30 million people in the United States who at some point in this next year of 2007 will not know where their next meal is going to come from. We have 10 million people in the United States who on a regular basis go to bed hungry. We have 47 million people in the United States who don't have health insurance. Three-quarters of them are working. And we call ourselves a compassionate nation. The right-wingers call us a Christian nation. Somehow I think that the world's great religions would look at this and say, no, the founders of the world's great religions, no. This is not what we had in mind. This is definitely not what we had in mind. This is not what the founders and framers of this country had in mind. And what Krugman points out in his failed revolution is that the Republicans said, oh, all we have to do is get rid of government. Shrink that sucker down and everything. And so, you know, what they meant was get rid of government social programs. They bloated up the military, of course. They bloated up the subsidies to the corn producers and the oil producers, you know, the good buddies. But yeah, they cut back on the social programs, did a fine job of it. Even Bill Clinton got in on the act, doing away with welfare as we know it. And what's the result? Hunger in America. This is how sad it gets. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Saddam Hussein. We'll talk about your hopes for the new year right after this. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
Franken Show with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. I'm going to drop you to our live chat room. Go to tomhartman.com and say hi to some of the finest minds on the whole entire Internet. It was the best of times and the worst of times. The year 2006, now gone today, the first day of the year 2007. It's New Year's Day. The best of times and the worst of times. It was the best of times if you were a fat cat investor. You paid a maximum 15% income tax on money that you made on investments. That was it. And after $90,000, no money at all did you have to pay in Social Security taxes. On the other hand, if you worked for a living in the United States and you made less than $90,000, 100% of your income was subject to Social Security taxes. You could pay an income tax rate up into the 30s. Corporations did very, very well. They saw their taxes go down broadly. We saw our taxes go up broadly. And the debt of the United States exploded. Basically, the rich got richer, the poor got poorer. America went to war. And now the 3,000th, well, not just last year, America continued to war. The 3,000th soldier has died in Iraq. Specialist Dustin Ardonica, 22, of Spring, Texas. Killed by small arms fire in Baghdad. Tony Snow, of course, when the 2,500th soldier died, said, well, it's just a number. Every time there's one of these 500 benchmarks, people want something. Yeah, how about peace, Tony? Be a good place to start. 1-866-440-8466. Dan in Eugene, Oregon. KTPK.
Hey, Dan. I just had a question. You didn't mention that Carter was always trashing the ex-presidents, which was sort of a given or maybe unspoken.
No, I did not say he was always trashing ex-presidents.
I said
Carter, when Carter recently spoke out against the war, that was, you know, and Jerry Ford didn't. He embargoed his comments until after he died. Carter was kind of breaking the unspoken rule, and Ford wasn't, but, yeah.
Yeah, but I recall Reagan constantly putting down Carter, constantly, and I thought, you know, Reagan hadn't any class whatsoever.
Right, but Reagan was, oh, you mean after Reagan, no, Reagan putting down Carter while Reagan was president?
Right, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I'd have to go back and look at the record. I don't recall that, Dan, but it doesn't surprise me.
I have another point. I don't know. I don't see whatsoever what I am, how I am safer in any way that I have to have a passport to go to Canada, to go to Mexico, to go to the Caribbean, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought I was part of the human race. Part of this, this world, this planet.
I thought we were parts of America.
Yeah.
What happened to the United States? What happened to the ideals of this country? No, the bottom line, Dan, welcome to 1984. George Orwell was right, and we are there. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Peter in Boulder. Hey, Peter, what's on your mind today?
Greetings from the winter wasteland.
Indeed. You guys have been getting whacked, haven't you?
I was in Chicago for Christmas. There wasn't a flake of snow on the ground. People were complaining. I said, come and get it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the weather is changing. There was an interesting article in the Sunday paper here in Portland, Oregon, about how the on the mountains all around us, the glaciers are down by about 30%. You know, it hasn't happened in known history.
Flowers are blooming in D.C.,
that's right, and that's causing now flooding. And I live on a floating house, you know, in the river. We'll have a river. And I'm reading this article going, there's going to be a lot of flooding. And I'm going, I don't know. This is a little making me nervous here. Anyhow, that's not what you called about.
I'd like to just say I'm glad Al Franken's in Iraq and Afghanistan disproving the idiotic Republican notion that you can't be against the Iraq war for the troops, and I'm just as glad that you're filling in, because I never heard of you before. You are fantastic, and I got a lot of friends in Boulder. We've been talking to each other. It's like, who is this guy?
Yeah, well, thank you, Peter, for your kind words.
By the way, you played a quote the other day from John F. Kennedy, where he's saying, if, you know, blank means liberal, then I'm a liberal.
Yeah, where I'm proud to be a liberal.
Can you put that on your website, or maybe even play it again today?
Yeah, sure. I'll play it again today after the break.
One of the reasons I called was I had been looking up the actual text of the Teddy Roosevelt quote about criticism of the president, and I found another one that I'd never heard before. Let me read it real quick. The things that will destroy America are prosperity at any price, peace at any price, safety first instead of duty first, the love of soft living, and the get-rich-quick theory of life. And it's like, who was this guy? He was ahead of the curve.
I know. And he was a Republican. But he was a progressive. See, that, I mean, this is the amazing thing. Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive.
And remember, in the tape of that poor woman, I was almost in tears. Do you remember that town hall meeting, where the
woman, he said, what do you do? And she said, I'm working three jobs.
Eight jobs, and what does W
yeah.
say?
He
That's
says,
the American dream.
I know. It was pathetic. It was really pathetic. Peter, thank you for the call and for your kind words. It's nice to hear from you. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Air America Radio.
Stand by me,
Support group I'm buying for We the People of the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Here's your clip from John Kennedy. This was during the 1960 election. He was speaking to the Liberal Party of New York. My recollection is it was like September, October. It was before the November election in 1960. You could probably Google it fairly easily with that. This is Jack Kennedy talking about why he's proud to call himself a liberal.
If by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights and their civil liberties, someone who believes that we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal. We need politicians once again who will say that. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. By the way, at the very top of my homepage on TomHartman.com, I put a cartoon. It's the only cartoon that has ever won or ever been nominated for. It didn't win, but it had ever been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. In 1939, after Hitler invaded Poland, MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, produced a four-minute cartoon about peace in the world that played in theaters all across the United States and was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. So you can find that at the top of TomHartman.com. It's just a beautiful little four-minute piece, and I'm going to take it down in a couple of days because it's very kind of seasonal. You know, it's themed around Christmas. But interesting, thought-provoking. Leonard in Phoenix, Arizona, listening on 1480 AM. Hey, Leonard, welcome to the program.
What a privilege to hear you down here in Phoenix. I'm fortunate because we have a great station down here with Dr. Newcomb and Jeff Farias. But
I agree, Mike. Newcomb does a great job, and I'm very pleased that we're on that on your station there on an ongoing basis, permanently.
Oh, it's so great. It's just an honor to talk to you. You're putting out the truth, and man, I emulate a lot of, you know, you got me very inspired. But anyways, hey, the reason I'm calling is I got back in February, basically from Iraq with the Arizona Army National Guard. Mm-hmm. My big beef right now is the way I'm looking at it. Okay, I know that the National Guard now by law is authorized, you know, the president has the power, at least all of the stuff I've been researching, to federalize National Guard and basically send them off. But the power that the president is using that for, from what I'm looking at here, states that they are getting that power constitutionally from Article 1, Section 8, and it basically says, you know, he can call forth a militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Now, you know, basically, we were attacked, I agree, but we were not attacked by Iraq. The 9/11 Commission has stated that. So, that being the case, the National Guard, basically being over in Iraq in a country that had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks, to me, that is an unconstitutional use of my fellow National Guard soldiers who are dying. And again, it's very tragic to hear about the 3,000th death, because I've seen it personally. I've seen soldiers needlessly die over there thanks to these chicken hawks. So I just, yeah. I wanted to get your take, because what I've seen in the Federalist Papers, you know, even with Hamilton, who's a big-time Federalist, he's stating that, you know, don't worry, the National Guard will not be, you know, kind of an army used for an empire. It'll be used to defend the country, you know, yeah. To, you know.
Well, first of all, let me just point out something, Leonard. Article 1 of the Constitution is not the powers of the presidency, it's the powers of Congress, because Congress was the first among equals. The Congress was the closest to we the people. So the founders very intentionally made Article 1, the first article of the Constitution, about Congress. Article 2 is the presidency, Article 3 is the Supreme Court. And Section 8 is titled Powers Granted to Congress. And you're right, it does say to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. But that's a power given to Congress. Now, what Bush is asserting, and I, you know, I'm not a constitutional scholar I'm not a lawyer. You know, certainly not a constitutional lawyer. I'm not any kind of lawyer. I can't speak to this, but we have had people on this program talking about this. And what Bush is asserting is that when Congress gave him that blanket authority, basically, if he would simply write them a letter saying that Iraq and Saddam Hussein were somehow involved with 9/11, they would give him the authority to do whatever was necessary to go into Iraq, that authority was such of such a blanket nature that it essentially gave Bush the power to federalize the National Guard, which he did. And I suspect that that position is right. Now, the flip side of this is that any power Congress gives to the president, power that power Congress can take away from the president.
Right.
Because Article One, as I pointed out, is about the powers of Congress, not the powers of the executive branch.
Exactly. So now, Mr. Hartman, when our Congress, our congressional Democratic leadership comes back into session, knowing this at the 9/11 Commission, knowing that Iraq had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks, they should take that power back and show the president that he is not a king, because, you know, basically it states it right there in black and white. And I've seen the erosion. You know, the governors protested in 1986, guard being used, and then they were overruled by the Supreme Court. So we've had our National Guard being sent around the world. They shouldn't call them the National Guard anymore. They're not here guarding our nation. They're fighting a war for an empire.
You're welcome. It's absolutely right and a very good point and well made, Leonard. And the National Guard should be here. I mean, you've got disasters going on. You've got forest fires. You've got missing guys on Mount Hood. You've got New Orleans, which has still not been rebuilt. I mean, there's a million things that the National Guard could be here for. And that's what people like you, Leonard, signed up for when you signed up for the Guard. And they should not be fighting foreign wars, period. It's just that simple. Jeff in Burbank, California. Hey, Jeff. Well, listening on AM 1150. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Yep, I love your show, Tom. Thanks for being here for us for the holidays.
Thank you.
I called
about
the main thing, but quickly, I was right before the holidays. I want to tell your listeners, I was on the air with Bill O'Reilly, and I told him he's been lying about Al Franken being bankrupt personally, which he said he was. And I told him Al Franken's over in Iraq still, because O'Reilly took a 3-day trip and he came back and started bragging about it. You know, I said Al Franken's been in Iraq for the third time. And I got that lick in right before he hung up.
good on you, Jeff. And good on Al Franken, by the way. I mean, that is, you know, that's a hellhole. I mean, going into a place that's this polluted with depleted uranium, where people are shooting at you, where I mean, it's just man, I tip my hat to Al Franken.
Absolutely, I did a USO tour one time. I was privileged to do that, and you really do get down with the guys, and you get the girls, and you really do talk to them. I know Al Franken's doing some great work over there. I called about a heads up to all progressives. We can't forget about these presidential papers that George Bush put into presidential seal that only he and his father could unlock in the first week of his presidency or the first 2 weeks. And I think that under presidential seal is information on the Reagan and Bush administration,
right.
and it was about to come out into public domain,
yep.
And we as American citizens need to have that information.
Yeah, the 25 years had expired. It was the first years of the Reagan administration were going to become public, and he resealed them. Plus his papers as governor of Texas, he resealed that. I mean, everybody's pointing to, you know, Howard Dean wouldn't let out some letters from AIDS activists because it would have revealed who had AIDS and who was writing him letters way back when, and he took all kinds of abuse from the right wing for that. And but these guys, they don't want to talk about how Bush is hiding things. You're absolutely right. This is one of the most secretive and I think frankly dangerously so secretive administrations in history. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call and for your kind words. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick. WCKG. Happy New Year, Rick.
Good show. One correction I did want to make was that John Calvin was actually a Swiss theologian.
Oh.
Living in Grand Rapids, which is kind of a Grand Rapids per se, not so much what West Michigan, we're kind of a bastion of Calvinism here.
Oh, I know. The headquarters of the American Calvinist Church is in Grand Rapids. Is
right.
Kent County.
I want to say you did a good job with your guest there at the very beginning of the show, but what I wanted to talk about was the execution of Saddam.
Yes, sir.
I saw a part of it. It's quite grisly. Some conspiracy theorists might have a case, you know, that was that really him or was he really hung, you know. But whoever that was seemed to be taking the execution quite calmly. And, of course, he was being taunted by people, I guess, who were shouting a Muslim cleric's name, I believe.
Muqtada al-Sadr. Yeah. This is the problem now that the way this is handled has left us, and not just us, I mean the whole, but particularly us, but also the whole government in Iraq that is aligned with us, al-Maliki's government, is that in that video, which everybody across the Middle East has seen 1,000 times, they've probably seen that as many times as we saw the planes fly into the 9/11 towers, in that video, Saddam Hussein comes across as calm, cool, collected, and a martyr,
yeah.
And his executioners come across as small-minded thugs, basically, you know, street punks who are torturing somebody that they're about to murder. And it's, it's not how it should be.
I mean, they didn't even show their faces.
Yeah, I know. First of all, I'm personally opposed to the death penalty. I just, you know, it doesn't work, and B, the more brutal a society is, the more brutal a society becomes. And I just think it's wrong. And frankly, if you even want to get into punishment, I mean, what's the worst punishment? Having your life end or spend the next 30 years in a jail cell? I think, frankly, the jail cell sounds a lot more frightening. But the bottom line is that even if you're going to have capital punishment, have some dignity about it. These guys totally blew it.
Do you think Bush told whoever the leader is over there to do this before the new year?
I don't know. I don't know. That's a very good question. I know that, you know, Bush is very upset that there was the information during the Clinton administration that Saddam Hussein had tried to assassinate his father, his mother, and his wife. All three of them were over there in Kuwait, you know, celebrating the grand victory of Bush Sr. And it wasn't just, hey, he tried to kill my daddy. I mean, later Bush said, and it's in the Washington Post today, in fact, later Bush said, you know, he tried to kill my wife. He tried to kill my mother. But, you know, whether this is Bush saying, you know, do it now or not, I don't know. It's almost beside the point. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We'll be right back.
Me and my guy.
Broadcasting. Tom Harmon here with you. Also filling in for Al Franken today. Al will be back tomorrow, for those of you who normally hear him. And for those of you who normally hear me, I will continue tomorrow as I have for the last 3 years. Yes. And time now, before we go back to your calls, time now for a conservative alert. Yes, a Bush administration, another brilliant idea. If you're going to fly, they want to read your email. No, I am not kidding. This David Millard, transport correspondent for The Telegraph, the British newspaper, Britain's Fly to America could have their credit card and email accounts inspected by United States authorities following a deal struck by Brussels and Washington. This is with the EU. Actually, this is not just Brits. This is pretty much anybody from the European Union. And it's not just about terrorism. By the way, it took a Freedom of Information request to extract this information from the Bush administration. They go on to say in the article, the Americans have asserted the right to the same information when dealing with other serious crimes. Americans are entitled to 34 separate pieces of passenger name record data, passenger name record, otherwise known as PNR. That's the information that the airlines have on you. Much of it is routine, but some elements will prove more contentious, such as a passenger's email address. They want your credit card number. They want your email address. And you think the Bush administration is not a bunch of fascists? I don't know. Armin in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hey, Armin.
How about the GOP really truly stands for gangsters, obscene profits?
Good one, good one. Thank you very much, Armin. Well said. Elaine in New Haven. Hey, Elaine.
Hey there, Tom. Thanks so much for what you've done. It's been great listening to you over the holidays.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say Happy New Year and that I'm hopeful that the year 2007 is a year that Americans actually speak up on their own behalf and call their leaders, especially Congress, because I believe we're at a crossroads right now where a new Congress is coming in and they need a lot of support because Bush is clearly planning to send more troops in.
Yeah.
And we need to speak up now about Iraq because you've talked a lot about world peace. I think the mission that they say, oh, we have to do the mission, we have to accomplish the mission. The mission should be redefined by us as one that we want peace in Iraq.
Yes.
That should
be
the mission.
Well
and I'm hopeful that we can get this done, Americans can get this done, because your program's brought to light. The media is not fair and impartial anymore. Big business governs everything, and somehow Americans have to speak up. That's the only way.
Spot on, Elaine, and thank you very much for pointing it out. It's very well said. Ed in San Diego, California. By the way, in the next hour, I want to get into what John Edwards said last week to Chris Matthews about the parade. I keep talking about the parade. We'll get back to that. Ed in San Diego. Hey, Ed.
Hi,
Tom. KLSD. Hey, what's up?
Yes, Tom, your chance comment about best of times and worst of times
caught me, my brain there, in a reference to Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities.
Yes, well, it's the opening sentence.
And so how about as a theme, I think this is one of the Democrats' best means of getting to 2008, and that is A Tale of Two Economic Extremes. And in that regard, of all, there's a support from, of all people, I don't know if you've seen the article, but Bill Gates Sr., along with Chuck Collins,
yes,
you know, they run the trust fund for the Bill Gates Foundation, Microsoft, but he wrote a editorial called Recycling Economic Opportunity.
Yeah, I read it. In fact, the two of them wrote a brilliant book, which was one of my BuzzFlash books of the month a year and a half ago.
Oh.
And I'm forgetting the title of it, but it basically was, you know, in favor of the inheritance tax and talking about the history of the inheritance tax. It's an absolutely brilliant little, maybe 60, 70-page book. You can read it in an afternoon.
Oh.
And Bill Gates Sr. And Chuck Collins has been on this program a number of times over the years. A good guy. These guys get it. They really get it. I don't know if his son, Bill Gates Jr., gets it, but Bill Gates Sr. definitely gets it.
Yeah, I don't think so. Just by one other thing by chance. Have you happened to ever seen a recent historical article in a big tome written by an originally British well-known journalist, but it's about, the title of the book is They Made America?
No, I haven't. I'm
all sorry. Right. In that, pull it up and read the article on Bill Gates, and it shows how that richest guy in the world made his dough through skullduggery.
Okay, I'll have to check it out, Ed. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Actually, he made his money on the basis of what, you know, there was a great article called Bill Gates' Welfare Queen, on the basis of copyright laws. You know, it's law that allowed him to make that money. Ben in Lancaster, Ohio. In other words, he used the commons. Ben in Lancaster, Ohio. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Tom. I Got Screwed. I love it. I think it's the greatest
my book.
Book I got. Great, great
you.
Book.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, and your book's good, too. Hey, listen, I just wanted to say on your very first, the guy that you opened the show with today, he asked if there was anything that was that you could think of that was infactual that was on ever reported on Fox News.
Yeah.
And I thought immediately of this summer when Sean Hannity had Rick Santorum on to explain the or to announce the weapons of mass destruction.
That's right. We found them, he was saying.
And,
yeah.
Yep. And the Pentagon had to come out and refute that one.
There you go. Well said. Ben, thank you very much. That's incredible, wasn't it? I mean, it's just absolutely. You get it. Fox News is the official voice of the Republican Party. There is no official voice of the Democratic Party, as well, you know, Will Rogers was right, but there at least is the official voice of the rest of us. Here we are, the rest of America, the vast majority of America, what I refer to as the radical middle. Those of us who would like, you know, national health care program, we'd like a clean environment, we'd like elections that are not privatized, we'd like good public schools. Yeah, gee, what a radical idea. Must be liberal. We'll be back after the news. Stick around.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where tuning in is just as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker named Jeff Gannon. Welcome. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Also filling in for Al Franken this last day. Al will be back tomorrow. John Edwards on Chris Matthews' program, Hardball. On, as I recall, it was Thursday, might have been Friday of last week, I watched it and I thought, that's it. Those of you who are longtime listeners of this program or who have read my books over the years, the books that I've written on politics, know that I'm a big fan of the parade theory of politics, which is to say, you know, the old Margaret Mead cliche, you know, never doubt that a small group of committed people can change the world. Indeed, that's the only way it's ever happened. I'm doing it from memory. I think that's what it was. I wrote a variation on that. That it's true that whether you're looking at the abolition movement or the suffrage movement or the civil rights movement or the anti-war movement or the women's rights movement, none of which arguably have been entirely successful, but all of which have been transformational in the history of the United States, or if you look around the world, even if you look at Nelson Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi, in every case, these movements did not start with the people whose names we associate with them. The New Deal, the movement to move away from laissez-faire economics in the United States in 1932 and move toward regulated capitalism that produced the strongest and most powerful middle class we've ever seen in the history of the United States, or in the history of the world for that matter, in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, which, of course, you know, Limbaugh and company are absolutely committed. I mean, this is the right-wing agenda is not a positive agenda. It's a negative agenda. It's about doing away with the New Deal.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Indeed. And so my position has always been it's not about the leader. It's about the parade. It's when enough of us get out there and get active. And it may not be instantaneous. People say, oh, well, there was millions of us in the streets in 2002 and Bush invaded Iraq anyway. Yes. There were people, I mean, you know, the suffrage movement, the women's suffrage movement, started before the American Revolution. The abolition movement started before the American Revolution. It may not happen this week. It may not happen this year. It may not happen even in your lifetime, to paraphrase John Kennedy from his inaugural. But still, we do it. And this was what I thought was absolutely amazing when Chris Matthews said to John Edwards, he asked him the classic marketing question. And I remember back in the days when I used to teach marketing and advertising communications, that we used to say, you know, what's your unfair competitive advantage? They reinvent the language every few years. And so now it's, you know, what's your special message or whatever. Here's Chris Matthews asked John Edwards this question.
Well, do you believe that you have a unique selling point up against the Hillary and perhaps Obama? What, and I'll ask you that question. They use it in business. What's your unique selling point as the Democratic candidate for 2008?
What's your unique selling point? Now listen carefully to what John Edwards said. And by the way, this is not an endorsement of John Edwards. I think he'd make a great president, frankly. But as my point is, it's not who's elected. It's about us. It's about the parade. And what impressed me about Edwards is he's the first guy to talk about this, the first person to talk about it. It'd be interesting to see if any of the other Democratic candidates. This, by the way, is what Howard Dean talked about in the last election as well, the parade, the rest of us. Here's John Edwards' response to that question.
I think I have a different perspective on what needs to be done in this country. I think that some people believe that we should campaign, hope that our next our candidate we vote for will be elected president, and somehow that president is going to go out there and solve all our problems. I just think that's not going to happen. If we want to actually change this country, the only way to do it is for America to get involved. You know, you've heard about Bill Clinton and others talking about individual responsibility. I'm not talking about individual responsibility. I'm talking about responsibility for your country.
You get this? This is tag, you're it.
We want people to take responsibility for their country, to not just wait for the government to solve their problems, but the government and Americans to work together to solve problems, which is why I've been talking about Americans actually going out there and taking action instead of waiting for the next election. I think that's different.
And Chris Matthews, you can see he's like, whoa, whoa. You know, this is like the Peace Corps. I mean, Chris Matthews actually joined the Peace Corps back in the day. And he's going, yeah. And so he continues his question.
President Bush, in his last press conference last week, said his idea was for America to go shopping. He literally said that. What do you make of that as a way to engage the public in our national cause?
What planet is he living on?
Yeah, good question. But then Edwards gets back to his theme of the parade, of my language, not his.
I have absolutely no idea. I mean, this is the man that's in charge of this war in Iraq. You know, after September 11th, we had an extraordinary moment of unity and a proud feeling of patriotism. I had it myself. All of us had it. And it was a great opportunity for us to tap in to the will of the American people to do great things together, not just for themselves, but for America.
Now, and he's absolutely right. In fact, it wasn't just Americans who were feeling together. It was the entire world. In Tehran, Iran they had a candlelight vigil in support of the United States the day after 9/11. There was not a Muslim country in the world that wouldn't have arrested and strung up Osama. Even Afghanistan offered to turn Osama bin Laden over to us. Bush said, no, we don't want him. We're going to come and get him. Because they didn't offer to turn him over to us. They said, we'll turn him over to a third country that will promise a fair trial. And Bush said, no.
I want him. I'm the sheriff from Texas.
So anyhow, John Edwards continues. He says, you know, there was this time when we all felt unified.
Well, see, I don't think that will and feeling has gone away. And we need, the next president of the United States needs to tap into it and say, not in an ideological way, not in a partisan way, but say, these are the great things that we can do as Americans, but you can't sit home and complain that somebody else is not doing their job. If you actually want America to be great, you're going to have to step out and take some responsibility yourself and do something.
I just blew me away. Just blew me away. And like I said, this is not, I've said for the better part of 3 years, over 2 years, that John Edwards, in my mind, is a good guy and would make a good president. There are parts of his voting record that I'm not all that fond of. You know, his environmental voting record wasn't all that wonderful. He's in favor of the death penalty. Historically, there have been a few areas where he has, quote, been a centrist. In fact, I think it would be safe to say that 6 years ago he was positioning himself as a DLC Democrat. Now he's positioning himself more as a progressive. I think that's what we want in America, is for politicians to follow the parade. The whole point, and this is, you know, Roy, in fact, Roy, I think, is in our chat room this morning. Yeah, hey, Roy. Or maybe not. He was earlier. In any case, Placidus, right? PQR. Yeah. In any case, he points out, and I actually quote him in my book, Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. He says, you know, if enough of us get out there and start the parade going down the street and have enough passion and enough energy and enough enthusiasm around it, eventually some politician is going to notice that there's a parade going down the street, and he's going to run out in front of it and hoist a flag up and say, this is my parade, I'm going this way. And when you look back at the history of the politicians who have created change in the United States, Abraham Lincoln did not run as an abolitionist. He did not run on a platform of freeing the slaves. If anything, I mean, go back and read the Lincoln-Douglas debate, it was the opposite. Teddy Roosevelt did not run as vice president with McKinley in 1896, 1898? I think it was the election of 1896. I'd have to go back and look. I believe it was 1896. Did not run as vice president as a progressive. He ran as the hero of San Juan Hill and, you know, basically a rich white guy, which is what he was, who was part of the power structure of America. But what happened? The parade was really picking up steam in the 1890s. The late 1880s, the Wobblies, the, you know, Joe Hill, the whole thing, it was all coming to a head by 1900. In 1900, the year that McKinley was assassinated and that Teddy Roosevelt became president, it was either 1900 or 1901. It might have been early 1901. In any case, in the year 1900, the census of the United States showed that the average income in today's dollars, adjusted for today's dollars, the average income in the United States was $9,700 per family. We had, from 1830 to 1930, virtually no middle class in the United States outside of small family farms. That was it. There was a middle class in the 1700s, in the mid to late 1700s, which was largely the result of cheap labor in the form of slavery and cheap land taken from Native Americans. And then there was a middle class from 1930 till the 1980s, which was brought about by Franklin Roosevelt changing the rules of capitalism. And that middle class, that second middle class, is being destroyed by, you know, the Reagan Revolution. And here you have, you know, Edwards, and hopefully other politicians will come along and say, number one, yes, we need to get back to the ideals that this country was founded on, the ideals of a middle class that can be brought about, as FDR showed us, in an egalitarian fashion that doesn't require stealing land from people or having slaves. We need to go back to a middle class, and we need to go back to the parade. 16 minutes past the hour.
American Show with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
See how they explain the inexplicable. Watch them all debate the undebatable. Apparently alive is never liable. Nine time for a talk show screamer.
And welcome back. Viagra for your brain. Tom Hartman here with you. Just don't tell Limbaugh. He'll want some. 21 minutes past the hour. We're speaking in the first hour of the program. We're live. It's New Year's Day, by the way. Happy New Year's. Talking in the first hour of the program with a fellow from TimesWatch.org about how the New York Times is liberal-biased, but Fox News is not. This from Neil Cavuto's program on Fox News.
Well, let me point out something positive about Iraq, if I may, for a second. Look, we took the fight to the enemy.
The enemy? Oh, really? Iraq was our enemy? I don't recall that they had attacked us. In fact, as I recall, it was George Bush himself who said...
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No, we have no evidence that Saddam is involved with September 11th. But nonetheless, Fox News had on this guy saying, we took the fight to the enemy and...
We divided the enemy. The enemy is now fighting itself.
Oh, isn't that marvelous? We brought civil war to a nation.
America's interest is surely being well preserved and well protected. We are, in fact, in a way, winning and preserving our interest here. Are we not?
Yeah. This is on Fox News. I'm going crazy. I'm sorry. It's just, it is, it's over the top. In the chat room, some folks pointing out that on that same interview with Chris Matthews, that John Edwards said he's not in favor of protectionism, trade protectionism. As I said, there's a lot of areas where I disagree with John Edwards, and I did not mean this as an endorsement of John Edwards for president. I'd say of all the candidates out there, the one that I'm probably closest to in terms of philosophy and perspective is Dennis Kucinich, who is a friend and who I have tremendous respect for and would vote for in a heartbeat. But, you know, the question is who's going to be the nominee and who's going to get elected and who's going to be able to change. If Edwards becomes the nominee, would he then? He is saying he doesn't want any more of these trade deals. It's a good start. It's a good start. George in Los Angeles. Hey, George.
Hi. Hey, don't be so pessimistic on Dennis Kucinich.
I'm not.
If you tout him just as much as you're talking about Edwards to enough people, they'll get to know him that his last name rhymes with spinach, and he'll may whoop the...
hey, Dennis is a regular on this program, George.
Popeye.
Dennis is a regular on this program. I'm a big fan of Dennis. Dennis and I have you know, given speeches together. We've shared I need not go through it all, but I'm a big fan of Dennis, and I he's a great guy. And like I said, he's probably more philosophically aligned with me than any of the other Democratic candidates.
Well, then so. You should know that he's said these things that John Edwards said much before him, and makes John Edwards look like a Johnny come lately.
Yep, I don't disagree. That wasn't my point. My point was that in the mainstream media. On Chris Matthews' program, which is, you know, owned by GE, the big defense contractor, you're not going to hear Dennis Kucinich on there, tragically. But now, you know, John Edwards was able to break through that, and I see that as a good sign, frankly. I'm optimistic about it. I'd love to see Dennis on there more. I'd love to see Amy Goodman on there, you know, from time to time. But they're not going to put real liberals. They're not going to put real progressives, or at the moment, real progressives on the mainstream media. The mainstream media is just, it's too corporate. It's too paranoid. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, Dwayne in Mill Valley, California. Hey, Dwayne.
Hi, Tom. Hey, Tom, we're trying to, People's Lobby out of California is trying to build a parade, and we could use a lot of help from your listeners. I hope that they'll go to the website, www.worldservicecorps.us, and consider this, because it touches on many of the things you said about Kennedy and Kucinich and Edwards. You know, I think you know a bit about it, that we're trying to build an American World Service Corps through a law that would put 1 million Americans into voluntarily serving through a dozen organizations like the Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, Habitat, Head Start, Teacher Corps, etc., throughout the world, either at home or abroad. And this all stems from People's Lobby's founder, Ed and Joyce Kupel, who used to have this adage that this country runs on laws. If you want to change the country, then write its laws. And what we've got is this piece of citizen-driven legislation that would get America up off of the couch, put them into service, have them change the world, and change the way we approach the radicalism that is existing throughout the world, and send a mission, not missiles, and have that mission be can-do Americans.
Yeah, I got it, Dwayne. It's great. Give us the URL one more time.
www.worldservicecorps.us.
Great. Thank you very much, and good luck with it. Number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We got a minute to break here, number 12. What's up?
Real quick, now they're trying to get your email at the airport. If they can do it at the airport, next thing they can do is they're going to do it at the state borders, and then they're going to do it at the county borders and the town borders. They're just trying to make a police state right here in America, and they're doing it by incrementalism.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And now they want to iris scan all children.
Exactly.
So that they can build a database. I mean, you know, it's like, and they've got these IED chips, and now the driver's license, the Real ID Act mandates that there be an RFID chip in your driver's license. They're putting them in passports right now as we speak, so that if you're standing in a crowd, they can drive by with a police car or whatever and just scan the crowd and instantly know everybody who's in it and everything about them, from their medical history to their social security number to their telephone number to who they voted for and everything. It's incredible. Number 12, thanks for the call. Always great to have you listening there on KTRC in Santa Fe. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Truth in Broadcasting for a Change in America.
When you should extend to a man for a friend of the channel that had broken down. Now you bring it up, I'm gonna ring it up just to hear you sing it out. Step from the road to the sea to the sky, and if you believe we rely on. When I lay it on, come get your bed on. All my life to sacrifice. Hey, oh, listen what I say. Oh.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Special thanks to Andrew Dunn and Julian Sukman, who came in today in New York to run the board for us on here this New Year's Day. Thanks, guys. Tip the hat to you. I appreciate it. Listener-supported radio, Tom Hartman here with you. Supported, yes, by you, our listeners. How do you support the program? By listening for the sponsors, particularly the local sponsors, and patronizing them, calling them up, letting them know that you heard their ad. Even if you can't buy their product, you'll recommend it to your friends. Let your stations know you're listening. And also supporting our national sponsors like Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. All organic, all fair trade, sacredgroundscoffee.com. And Small Dog Electronics. Get the latest iPods now, smalldog.com. The organic wine company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, ecowine.com. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Kathy in New Jersey. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you, too, Kathy.
Well, thanks for being there live for all of us out here.
You're welcome. I'm having a good time. What's up?
Hey, what do you think of Al Gore? Do you think he's going to run?
I don't know. You know, he came here to Portland about 6 months ago, and I was invited to introduce him at the Rose Garden. It's like basketball court. There's like 5,000 people there. And I introduced him as the once, and I gave a little rap about how the election was stolen, and when the New York Times did the count, they found that he actually got more votes than George W. Bush. And then I introduced him as the once and future president of the United States. And he gave me this look like, what? You're really out there. And then I moderated a Q&A afterwards with him. And, you know, one of the people in the audience got up and said, you know, Hartman was saying, you know, it sounds like you're running for president again, are you? And he said, and I was standing like 3 feet from him. And he looked down. And, you know, when people look down, they're usually checking out their feelings. And he looked down for a minute, kind of like he was checking it out and gathering up his thoughts. And then he looked out at the woman in the audience and just, you know, straight at her and said, you know, right at this moment, I am seriously inclined not to. And now, this is not from memory. I mean, this is from memory, so it may not be word for word, but words to the effect of, at this moment, I'm inclined not to, and in all probability won't, but I'm not going to absolutely close the door.
Tom, who would you rather see, him or John Edwards, if you could pick one?
Flip a coin.
Who?
I would go for either one.
Yeah, either one. Now, I would like my congressman to run. I don't know if you ever heard of Frank Pallone.
I don't know his positions, but my point is, I mean, even if Hillary Clinton, who I'm opposed to on a whole huge spectrum of issues, even if she was running, I would vote for her and work for her, you know, on the theory that we, the people, need to get engaged, we need to create the parade, and we need to be pushing our candidates in the direction that we want them to go. And so we'll see how it all shakes out ultimately. But I don't. I think that we make a mistake when we think it's about finding the perfect candidate. It's not about finding the perfect candidate.
They're not perfect by any means.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really about us. It's about us getting involved. That's what we have to do. Okay. Kathy, I got to move along.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. Maurice in Atlanta. Hey, Maurice.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
Listen, I just wanted to pass along some information on the RFID chips that you were mentioning earlier and the passports. They can't be disabled by smashing them with a hammer. They are on the back of your passport, obviously. It doesn't negate the passport at all. Smash them, and that'll be the end of that.
Okay.
And
also, Interesting.
And also the Real ID Act, probably the states won't go for it. They've been haggling for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the states are ultimately not going to go for it because of the cost. But, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. Maurice, thanks a lot for the call and the heads up. Patricia in Monterey County, California. Hey, Patricia.
Hi. I love your show, Tom Hartman.
Thank you.
I'm in unbelief that a huge company is attempting to wipe me out and other clowns in California. Now, I'm a very small business owner with an entertainment company that mainly does children's parties. And I acquired a well-known character costume that parents have asked for, and I barely used the costume. But naively, I put it on my website. And this company has a team that witch hunts like the warlords coming into a village.
Well, are they trying to protect their trademark on Bozo the Clown kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And you can't even license the costume.
Yeah. Well, this is a legitimate debate that we should have in the United States. You know, when Disney got the copyright laws and the trademark laws extended beyond 70 years, I thought it was a dark day for America. Thomas Jefferson was strongly of the opinion that copyright and trademark laws should be no more than 3 years, that you want to encourage innovation, you want to encourage people to create things, but then things should go into the public domain, and if people want to continue making money on them, they should have to continue creating things. If that was the case, Bill Gates would merely be moderately wealthy right now rather than a billionaire. And, because he's made all his money on the copyright laws. But the reality is, Patricia, right now, those people with the biggest bucks who get there the first or who are able to influence legislation like Disney did with their characters and stretch them out the longest end up controlling these characters, these brands, these ideas, these stories, whatever. And I say this, I have some self-interest in this. I'm an author. And if all of my books at the end of 3 years suddenly became the public domain, I would lose some income from that. But I still think that it would serve the public good, and I'd be willing to do it. Patricia, thanks for calling and pointing. This is an issue that we really need to have a conversation about. Sarge in Columbia, Mississippi. Hey, Sarge.
Hello. How are you today, Tom? Thank you for being on air today.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks for the acknowledgement.
Well, you had it right the first time. Listen, I wanted to make a statement. I think it's good that Edwards came out and said he made a mistake on his voting on the Iraq War.
I agree.
I think that's important. And I'm glad he announced in New Orleans. You know, I've been working on this Katrina thing for over a year now, and he's the first candidate to really come out strong and make any statement concerning Katrina. I've called Hillary Clinton, I've called Kerry, and virtually every one of them. And Clinton and Kerry just totally didn't even want to talk about it. They just said, we don't care about that.
Yeah, that's a shame.
And so I'm strongly against those two, strictly on that alone. Yeah. But I do appreciate the fact that we've got somebody out there who is saying it. And I got to remind people, it's not only New Orleans. New Orleans is in...
No, it's the Gulf Coast. Yeah,
we also got it down here, Tom.
Yeah, you're right.
Thank you, buddy.
Sarge, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Bob in Brooklyn. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
I enjoyed your discussion last week in evolution and creation. And I think you'd be interested in an author by the name of Dr. Yu Ross. He has a PhD in astrophysics, but he writes from a Christian point of view. He's an old Earth creationist. In other words, he believes the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. As science
is, he the guy who wrote the book that tries to reconcile Christianity with evolution?
Yes. Well, he.
Because I had somebody on this program about 3 or 4 months ago who wrote a book, and I don't have the book. I'd have to dig through my pile here.
The name of the book that Dr. Ross wrote is The Creator and the Cosmos.
Okay, it's not the same one. But this
and
person
he also
basically
wrote
said,
Creation and Time.
Yeah, this person said, and they actually did a very good job of it, argued that the Bible actually has evolution in it. For example, the story of the speckled goats, you know, I forget who it was, maybe it was Abraham. Somebody back in the Old Testament was breeding goats, you know, and there's this whole story of evolution right there in the Bible.
Right, well, Dr. Royce goes into detail concerning evolution and the Big Bang, and he reconciles it beautifully with the Bible. If I also may comment on an economics, I've been unemployed now for quite some time, and the government doesn't count the people whose unemployment benefits expire.
Right, after 18 months, you're no longer unemployed.
You're considered off the radar screen, as a result, every time a politician says that the unemployment rate is only 4.5%. It's a total distortion of the truth.
No, the best guess that I've seen is that the real unemployment figure in the United States is around 8%, 8.5%, maybe 9%. And if you include people who are underemployed, people
right.
who are working part-time jobs when they want full-time jobs, maybe
right.
as high as 15%. And it's,
right.
it's a national disgrace. Bob,
well, I'd really like to hear you invite Dr. Ross on your show. His books are available on Amazon.com,
okay.
I believe.
I'll check it out, and my producer has gotten a heads up on it. Thanks a lot, Bob. Jesse in Atlanta. Hey, Jesse. Welcome.
Good afternoon, and Happy New Year to you, Ms. Cartman.
Well, thank you,
very,
Happy New Year to you, too.
Are the bombings in Bangkok, Thailand, a sign of greater political turmoil, and will American troops intervene if the situation continues to deteriorate there?
In Bangkok?
Yes, sir.
I don't really know. I've spent a fair amount of time there. I was there just the week before the last. Not the last coup, but the coup before last. This was like 15 years ago. In fact, Louise and I had taken our three kids for a week to. We have a friend, Bernie Cooper, who had married a woman who lives in the Klong Toi slum, and Duang Prateep got a $5,000 grant from the Rockefeller Foundation to turn this slum into something that was viable, and it was working. It was really working, and so we took our kids to spend a week in the slum for their spring vacation back. 15 years ago or so when they were all younger. And the week that we came home and a week later we were seeing that they were stacking up bodies in the lobby of the hotel that we had stayed in when we came into town. My sense of it is that Thailand is not on the brink of chaos. I think that this is just, you know, stuff that happens. Yeah, I know they had a military coup recently, but they have the king there is highly revered. And I think that at its core, Thailand is fundamentally stable. I'd be more concerned about the possibility of the future of Taiwan and China. That there's going to come a point where China is going to say to us, we're taking Taiwan, and if you try and stop us, we're going to start selling treasury bills. And we're going to have to say, okay, good luck. See you later, Taiwan. And that's going to be a tough one. And, of course, South Korea and North Korea, I'm far more concerned about them. 45 minutes past the hour.
This land is your land.
This land is my land.
If we come together and work together, we can pull the weeds that threaten to destroy our land. I hope and pray you understand. We cannot reap a good harvest with a bunch of bad seeds. Wake up and shake it up, America. North to south, from east to west, from sea to shining sea.
And welcome back to the True People's Radio. Tom Hartman here with you, 9 minutes before the hour. A little help from our friends, Andrew Dunn and Julian Sickman in New York, running the board and answering the calls. And Louise and I here in Portland, making the radio, making the noises on the radio. And so pleased to have you with us, all the folks in our chat room. You can get to it over at TomHartman.com. Drop in and say hi. And our telephone, 1-866-440-8466. Gene in California listening on the Quake. Hey, Gene.
Hi. You know, Tom, I'm still mourning the loss of our Bill of Rights and habeas corpus through the Military Commissions Act. And I've decided to start wearing a white armband to indicate that I want to see a restoration of them.
You know, we do need some kind of a logo. It's like the yellow ribbons have become the support your troops thing, and there no good branding for give us back our rights.
Yeah, I thought a black armband, but that's too depressing. I want a restoration white armband.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, do you think there's any hope in 2007 to restore these?
I have tremendous hope.
Oh, great.
I think it's just absolutely marvelous that the Democrats, have taken control of the House and the Senate, and not just because it's the Democrats, not because it's sort of my side, although I'm not registered as a Democrat. I generally support Democrats, although I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, and I think the Green Party is a great thing, too. But the fact that we now have some accountability, some balance, that there's... You know, America was designed to be in a state of constant dynamic tension between the executive branch and the legislative branch. The thing that concerns me the most is, and this is getting virtually no play in the press, is that Cheney has already come out and said that when the legislative branch begins doing oversight on the executive branch, that he's going to refuse to testify, and he's going to refuse to allow anybody from his office to testify. And, you know, he's got this idea, Cheney and Bush have this idea of the imperial presidency, something that goes back, arguably to Nixon. You know, I'd say it goes back all the way to John Adams, frankly. But
so, in other words, they want to tie it up in a constitutional crisis.
That's right. That's right. And that's going to be the big story of 2007, is the constitutional crisis that comes out of the attempts by Congress to investigate these guys. And that's why, again, we need to be active. We need to be so active and so loud that even the Republicans in Congress hear from us that they've got to hold these guys in the executive branch accountable for what they've done.
I'm going to be in that parade.
Okay, there you go. Thanks a lot, Gene. Great to hear from you. Ted in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Ted.
Hey, Tom. Thanks a lot for taking my call. We have a lady in Eugene who is living on $600 a month Social Security. She has a mental illness. She had a fire in her apartment in which she was burned out and was replaced or placed in a new St. Vincent de Paul subsidized apartment, and they reduced the rate of her rent a little bit. Now they want to reduce her food stamps because she's getting $7,200 a year, and that's just too much money.
Jeez. I was going to say we have us to thank for it, but I think we were blissfully ignorant when Bill Clinton was president and basically promoted a whole bunch of right-wing things, and we just thought, well, you know, he's a Democrat, he's a good guy, and, you know, ending welfare as we know it, et cetera. And as a consequence of that and of Bush's continuing these policies, we now have, you know, poverty is on the increase in the United States. Hunger is on the increase in the United States. It's not a good thing. It's just not a good thing. Ted, is there a website for folks who want to help this woman out?
You know, I don't believe this. I don't believe so. I just found this out last night from my sister, and it just kills me that they're going to, you know, want to take her food stamps away, or at least a portion of them, because she's paying a little bit less in rent and she's making $600.
Well, let your legislators know. Eugene is represented by Peter DeFazio, isn't he?
Right.
Yeah, so call Congressman DeFazio's office. Peter DeFazio is the kind of person who would love to take this kind of issue on.
Right.
And, of course, call Gordon Smith's office and Ron Wyden's office, the two senators from Oregon, and raise some hell about it. I mean, that's and write letters to the local paper and keep calling talk show, you know, programs. You might even call KOPT and see if they have any interest in doing anything locally about it. Ted, I got to move along. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Rachel in Taos, New Mexico, listening on KVOT. Hey, Rachel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Happy
sure.
New Year.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you, too.
I'm a first-time caller, so I'm a little bit nervous. But
that's quite all right.
I was listening.
Although we only have about a minute left here, so.
Okay, I just wanted to comment about the immigration things that you were talking about the other day about people hiring illegal immigrants. And,
yeah, my point was that we don't have an illegal immigrant problem, we have an illegal employer problem.
Right, and I live in an area in New Mexico that is full of illegal immigrants, and the one thing that I've seen firsthand is that people are not hiring illegal immigrants knowingly. That illegal immigrants are using fake social security numbers, and the thing about that is that they're paying taxes. They're paying income tax. They're paying, you know, taxes when they go to the store. They're paying into this economy, and they're not getting any benefits from it. They can't get a income tax return. They can't get...
I understand, Rachel, and it's one of the arguments that the right-wingers who want to continue large quantities of people who are not citizens working in the United States makes, but if you compare the cost of to the commons, of having people here, you know, educating their children, ultimately taking care of them in their old age, providing hospital services and things, it exceeds the amount of money in taxes that are being paid by them. And you could toss in crime and things like that. I just, you know, I don't buy it as that's the reason why we should have a slave labor class in the United States.
I agree with that either, but I do think that this government is reaping billions in benefits from the taxes.
Okay.
These people don't get anything for it.
Okay, I'll agree with you on that. Absolutely. And Rachel, I'm sorry we have to wrap it up, but yeah, a good point. And that might be one of the reasons why the government doesn't want to do anything about it. But we should. We should. I mean, you know, it's not right that we have people who are working in, you know, essentially in servitude because of terrorize. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us. Remember, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.